thing about a potluck is you never really know what to expect. One day you might get a normal fruit salad, the next day one of those green marshmallow dishes. Now it's better than a buffet, where you don't know exactly who sneezed in your food. At a potluck, you know exactly who sneezed in your food, but I'm not sure that's terribly reassuring. This week's episode is going to be a little bit different than past gatherings of the Potluck Society. We only have one interview with the incredible creative founder of Right Now Podcast, Sarah Warner. We have a series of recommendations of other podcasts you should be listening to. And as always, we have an action antidote to combat apathy wherever it exists. But before we go any further, let me introduce myself. Hi, I'm Hugh Weber. Welcome to the Potluck Society. In January of 2015, Sarah Warner clicked her computer mouse and the Right Now podcast came to life.
This is the Right Now podcast, episode 1. What's keeping you from writing? Welcome to Write Now, the podcast that helps aspiring writers to find the time, energy, and courage you need to pursue your passion and to write every day.
But Sarah and Write Now's story starts way before
so
that.
So a long time ago, I was talking with my good friend Peter Adal, and I was like, I'm blogging, and I'm not getting any traction, and I'm very frustrated. And he's like, Sarah, why aren't you podcasting? And I said, oh, what? Podcasting? Can I do that? And then I was like, oh boy, something new to learn and dig my teeth into and enjoy. And so I started podcasting about creative writing because I'm a writer at heart. It's something I'm passionate about. I love sharing information about it. I love taking a journey with people. I try not to be the sage on the stage. I try to make sure that I'm exploring things along with people. But I talk about all different things, you know, how to create in a time of destruction. You know, what can we do to offset, you know, negative feelings by creating things? So it's very creation forward. And it does talk a lot about possibility. I try to be very encouraging. And really it's for aspiring writers and all writers, and it gives them the time, energy, and courage they need to pursue their passion and write every day / create every day. It's called Write Now because I love puns. So that's W-R-I-T-E. Now it's in the iTunes store and all over the place. It's been going for about 2 years and it's completely changed my life.
Sarah is completely serious. It changed her life.
One of the ways it's changed my life is completely defying all of my expectations of what having a podcast would be like. And I hope that you experience this too. But, you know, you think of writing and podcasting both as these extremely isolated professions, these isolating incidents. So the writer in the ivory tower, you know, the podcaster alone in their sad little audio booth.
I'm recording this alone in my basement at midnight. No judgment.
No, that's the thing. But what they are is they're deeply relational. And you're nodding. And it's true. I've met the coolest people in the universe because of my podcast, which is so weird. But I've had people write in from Saudi Arabia. I've had people write in from Russia and Italy and Brazil and saying like, hey, and sometimes they don't even use my show like I think they will. So it's there to encourage people to write. Some people listen to it because they're trying to learn English. And I have a good enunciation, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. I'm from Cleveland where the broadcasters learn. But it's just, it's beautiful. It's amazing. And that's actually, it's opened so many doors.
She's not kidding. Sarah started a podcast, but it's become something much bigger.
This little isolated hobby of mine has just opened so many doors. One of those was the column that I'm writing for Forbes about podcasting.
Did I forget to mention that Sarah writes a column for Forbes about podcasting?
And so one of the editors was listening to my show and saw that I was active on some forums, especially one on Facebook for female podcasters, sort of giving them the courage, sort of the technical encouragement and advice. And I was active on that forum giving advice to people, hopefully not in a, I don't know, holier-than-thou sort of, oh, I've been there, done that kind of way, hopefully in a helpful way. And she saw that I was engaged in this community. I was passionate about podcasting and I was a decent writer. And she's like, hey, are you tired of just podcasting about writing? How would you like to flip that around and write about podcasting? And I was like, wow, okay, so if Forbes offers you a column, you don't say no.
Isn't that the truth? Forbes, if you're listening and you're dying for content about rural creatives and community builders, Sarah knows where to reach me. But let's not get distracted from this interesting circle of writing about podcasting and podcasting about writing.
Writing about podcasting and podcasting about writing is delightful. It's delightful. I love it. My mind is always going naturally along that progression anyway. And so it just feels really natural that I kind of follow that throughout my day. It's really fulfilling in a way to get to sort of you project things, right, when you're teaching. I think of what I do as teaching in two separate ways. So I'm teaching and then enacting, and then I'm enacting and then teaching, which is really interesting because, you know, I write about podcasting. And people say, oh, you actually do have the cred because you podcast about writing. And so I feel like I have good credibility built up there and that the cyclical nature works well for me there. But yeah, at the same time, I never want to exclude anything else. And so I had somebody ask me the other day, like, oh, you draw too, or you create art? And I said, yes. And they're like, well, that's not part of your circle. You know, doesn't fit neatly within that circle. Right. But a lot of things don't. So
do you find that you're intentional about that, about getting outside that circle, or is it something that just naturally happens for you?
No, because the circle, it's easy to be in the circle. It's yeah. easy. It's easy to ascribe to that label and say like, oh, well, these are the things that I'm allowed to do. And I know you and I have talked before about the addictive nature of possibility. And so I think that's what keeps me going outside of that little two-dimensional like brand that I've made for myself or that's been made for me or some mixture of the two. Yeah, it feels good to do other things. It feels good to write. It feels good to sketch. It feels good to draw. It feels good to go on hikes and climb mountains and do things that are, you know, off brand, so to speak.
But Sarah has assured me that it's not all rainbows, sunshine, and phone calls from Forbes.
Things develop slowly and frustratingly. And it's so interesting because we look at successful people, but we don't look at their process, right? We look at creative people and we look at these beautiful things they make, but we don't see, you know, we see the one perfect thing they've created. And we disregard, you know, the 99, you know, balled up, you know, ideas in the trash can. And so it's just been a real eye-opening experience. It's been a real discovery of that failure after failure after failure.
I have to understand that I was 8 weeks into not launching the Potluck Society when I talked to Sarah. For anyone that has dealt with the creative journey, the struggle is real.
I submitted to iTunes for the first time, and they were like, yeah, no. And I was like, okay, let's retool some stuff. We'll just get this back out there. No one has to know that I failed the first time. I think I've told you this before. I have spreadsheets and spreadsheets and spreadsheets. And I went into this and I was not a planner. And I think I've discovered that planning is actually a liberating thing. And I have this list of probably close to 1,000 items that I checked off before I launched my show. And I'm so impatient. I wanted to launch it before they were all done. But you can't, you know, you have to be very methodical. And again, that's something that, you know, we talk about being creative, but so much being creative is being strategic and technical and planning. And it's just not something that I was initially comfortable with. I've become a little bit more comfortable with it through doing it. But from, writing, you know, the little blurb, coming up with a good title for my show, buying the domain, the URL for my show, creating the artwork, you know, making sure I wasn't stealing someone else's copy. I mean, just so much research went into it. But it's been fun, at least. I don't know. I love learning.
Yikes. This creative exercise sounds more like a J-O-B to me. But she's right. This is hard. It's really hard. We talk about that in a little bit. But the podcast isn't Sarah's actual job. So I asked her about her average
day. I figured out recently that I work about 80 hours a week. And it's hard to say that it's work because so much of it is fun and so much of it is interesting, which is what I live for. But I get up at 5 And I'm usually at Caribou Coffee doing my writing for Forbes or working on my podcast by like 5:45, 6. And I'm there until I leave for work at about 7:30, 7:45. And then I work at ClickRain for my full 8-hour day.
And what is your role there?
Oh, yeah. I'm the senior UX content strategist there. I'm there until 5, and then I go home, go to the gym, have dinner. And then usually from about 7 to 10, I am working on my podcast, writing for Forbes, trying to fit in my own writing stuff, that kind of thing. So it's a rich, full day. Yes.
Sounds really stressful to me. And Sarah has admitted that she feels pressure to maintain consistency of production and maintaining the numbers of subscribers and downloads.
You can watch. So I watch my numbers in Libsyn, which is my audio host, and it says how many downloads I'm getting per day. If I miss an episode, so like my episodes are supposed to come out on Monday. If I miss an episode, my numbers just plummet. They plummet by hundreds. And then you can watch the little graph. It remains like plateaued low. And you're like, but I worked so hard to get my numbers up so high. And now I missed one small episode and they're so low. And so part of the challenge is producing content consistently. The other part of the challenge is being okay when your numbers crash. Realizing that you're human and that there's a lot going on in life and that fickle people may not listen anymore, but you still have this core of people who say, oh, you released one, 2 weeks later, I'm going to listen. I'm going to get back on the train and I'm going to send you a supportive email that says, hey, I'm happy that you finally released an episode. But it's hard because there's so much wrapped up in that. You know, there's your own ideas of what success are. There's your own ideas of who you are, right? If you let yourself down. I hold myself, and I have the feeling you do too, to a very, very high standard. And it's very hard to let that slip away because you're letting slip away your control, but also this participation in this greater community, right? If I don't release an episode, I'm not helping people that day, right? Or I'm not communicating with people that day. And that's what I... That's what I promised to do. And that's what I need to do in my heart. Like, I need to do this. And so there's just so many challenges that I don't think get talked about a lot with consistency. And of course, you know, then there's also the very real challenges of fitting everything into your schedule, which I do struggle with. But it's just, I hate the thought of letting anyone down. And that's really the hardest part.
After talking about her work as a ghostwriter and all of the other things she does, our conversation ended up on vulnerability and identity. I wasn't sure how to fit this in, but it felt too important to edit out.
So I'm fine being vulnerable writing for other people. I'm fine being vulnerable on my podcast, but it's so hard because I think of myself as a writer. And, you know, going back to what we were talking about before with that label that's been placed on me, I'm afraid I won't live up to that label specifically, Sarah the creative writer, Sarah the novelist, which is why I've never finished a novel.
Fascinating. Is that when you think of your identity, is that where you go first? Do you think of it as a writer?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
As opposed to maybe like a more broad creative? Do you?
You know, the broad creativity has come because I'm so terrified of being a writer. Mm. And so I have creative energy. We all have creative energy. And you can nurture it, you can let it go stagnant, whatever. You have creative energy. And I firmly believe that. And so mine sometimes channels itself in ways that I don't expect. So creating a podcast, for example, I think I used the podcast a little bit as an excuse to procrastinate from writing, but then it became its own like living, breathing thing. And now I love it. And I do everything myself. I do all the art. I do all the editing. I line up interviews. I do it all myself. And it's just creative in so many different unique ways, but I still feel driven to write. And so sometimes at 10 o'clock at night, when I'm done with all my podcasting stuff and all my other work that I have, I'll bring out my little notepad and I'll start writing ideas for this novel that's been existing and non-existing at the same time for like 10 years.
Sarah and I both romanticize this audio medium, these podcasts, for their intimacy and the relationships they build.
I think it's so intimate to have. So like right now, ostensibly, I'm speaking into someone's ear. Hello, I'm in your ear right now. Is that weird? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe
a little seems a little weird.
It seems a little weird. But these preserved sound waves from my voice, from my throat, are like going to somebody else's ear. That's very like weirdly intimate. There's also this this sense of podcasting creating a space, a small space, where you are alone together with this person who is speaking to you. And it's even different than it is when you're reading a book. And I haven't figured out exactly why that is, but I think it's because reading a book, you know, you have different voices, you have maybe characters in a novel. With podcasting, you're just there with one person. And I've had listeners send me emails and said like, hey, I love going on walks with you. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's what I'm doing. Really. You're accompanying someone on their journey and you're doing it, in a way that their other senses are maybe free to engage with the world around them. And maybe you're creating that connection that way. I also believe that people are hardwired to respond to voices and that a voice has an authenticity innate in it. We can mask our faces, I think. And, you know, there's all these things about smiling with your eyes and all that, but it's very hard to mask your voice because we're such visual creatures that we pay attention to how we look. We don't pay attention, and we can mask that, but we don't pay attention to how we sound until that sound is isolated. And so if I'm nervous, you can hear it in my voice. Like my voice will shake, and I won't be as familiar with hiding that as I am with like hiding my emotions on my face. And so I think that that is really one of the reasons that podcasting is such an intimate and authentic medium and why it has a power to it that maybe others don't. It's so easy to hide yourself in your writing. Like, oh, I can take on another voice. It's like one step removed from the other person. There's maybe an editor who goes in and changes some of my words. But podcasting is like one-on-one, my voice, your ears, nothing to hide.
It has been by far one of the harder things I've done, even in this pre-launch stage, because I think there was this sense, and the number of people I talked to, they said, you're so good. You step up on stage without notes. And this is so you. Just press record and the podcast fairies will make sure that the world hears it.
Oh, bless and,
I think that those thousand things kind of can jump up on you unexpectedly. But at the same time, you said that it's changed your life. And I'd love to hear kind of what advice, knowing that those thousand things are definitely there, what advice you'd offer to someone that thinks they have a unique perspective or thinks they have something to share and maybe has some anxiety around getting started.
Definitely. I feel like, I hope this won't be too cliche, but life is so limited. This is one of those things that I've been learning, and maybe I've been learning it a little too much, is that, you know, life is so short. I realized that it could very well pass me by and, you know, all I would be full of is regrets. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna do this. I'm just gonna start. I'm just gonna take that first step, which leads to the second step, which leads to the third step. I think that people don't realize how powerful we are. And we are powerful because we are creative. We are powerful because there's so much possibility and opportunity out there to latch onto. Like I said before, I think the key lesson I've learned is that it's all about relationships, right? It's about communication. It's about relationships. It's about creating a network of people. It's not about doing it by yourself. Like I said, I would have never started if it hadn't been for Peter saying, hey, Sarah, why don't you start a podcast? Like, I wouldn't have known to do that. And so if you're listening, I'm going to say, hey, why don't you start a podcast or write a book or take that dance class you've always wanted to? Because sometimes we just need other people to encourage us a little bit. And so if you feel like you want to start something, but you're not sure, reach out to somebody who started it already. Ask them what their first step was. Ask them how they got into it or what you should do if you want to get into it. And I hope that they're willing to reach back out and help you.
The Right Now podcast is now well past its 50th episode and doesn't show any signs of slowing down. Thank you, Sarah, for your time, treasure, and talent. This was incredible. Thank you. According to Edison Research, 1 in 5 Americans listen to podcasts every month as of early 2016, a number that has grown double digits for 5 years. Even though podcasts are growing quickly and are available in more places than ever before, some people still don't know how to listen or where to start. Through an incredible unified effort with NPR and a host of industry leaders, we are working together to show new audiences how easy it is to listen. To do this, I want to make a couple of recommendations of my own. The first recommendation I absolutely need to make is 99% Invisible, hosted by Roman Mars.
This is 99% Invisible. I'm Roman Mars.
In 2010, in just episode 6, titled 99% Symbolic, Roman visits the ideas of flag design.
The 5 basic principles of flag design.
According to the North American Vexillological Association. Vexillological.
And vexillology is the study of flags.
We had the opportunity to bring Roman to Sioux Falls through an OTA event, which sparked a Sioux Falls flag design effort, which resulted in an unofficial but suitable flying banner for our city. This is an extraordinary podcast and an even better episode. My second recommendation is the program On Being by Minnesotan Krista Tippett.
I'm Krista Tippett, and this is On Being.
Her interview with Desmond Tutu, Archbishop and Nobel Laureate, is my favorite episode, under the title A God of Surprises.
He disarmed me from the outset with his famously mischievous humor. I'd brought along a bowl of dried mangoes, having been told by his staff that he is, quote, mad about dried mango. And he noticed them as we were finding our seats before I could say anything.
There we go. And I notice, you've got a glass of water, I've got a glass of water. But then you have dried fruit. Why do you rate dried fruit and I not?
I brought this for you because your office told us that you love dried mango.
You beautiful thing. Oh, you are a star.
I have listened to this episode well over a dozen times because there's something about this South African archbishop that reminds me of my Norwegian farmer grandfather, Roscoe. His voice, his laughter. This episode from 2014 is magic. I can't recommend it strong enough. My third and final recommendation is another human being that I've had the distinct pleasure of meeting in person. Debbie Millman embodies grace and graciousness. My life is fundamentally better having spent time in her presence. There's an episode of Design Matters, her award-winning, incredibly successful podcast, that I've listened to more than any others. It's her interview with Michael Arad. Let's listen to the intro.
This is Design Matters with Debbie Millman from DesignObserver.com. On this program, Debbie Millman talks with the designer of the 9/11 Memorial, Michael Arad.
I think design is a process. It's about constraints, and it's about responding to these constraints creatively, but without losing the vision of what you're trying to do here. And at the end of 8 years, I feel we've been remarkably true.
Here's Debbie Millman.
The country recently marked the 10th anniversary of September 11th. At the World Trade Center site, after many years of delay, the Freedom Tower is quickly rising and will soon reach its symbolic height of 1,776 feet. Down below, in the footprints of the original Twin Towers, is the National September 11th Memorial, which just opened to the public. The memorial was designed by Michael Arad. 7 years ago, Arad's design beat out more than 5,000 other designs for what is probably the most important commission since Maya Lin completed the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in 1982. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being here today.
So those are my 3 recommendations. I have dozens more. Check out the hashtag Trypod, T-R-Y-P-O-D, on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, and you'll see dozens of recommendations of extraordinary storytellers using audio mediums and the radio to tell great stories about incredible people. Our action antidote for the week is pretty simple. I want you to think of one person, think of any person, someone you love, someone you work with, that isn't an active podcast listener. Considering them, I want you to think of a program you've heard that would be ideal for them to learn about, something to share, something to excite them or inspire them or encourage them along the path. Reach out to them, share that podcast, and then tweet, Instagram, Facebook update, or share somewhere else what you've shared and who you've shared it with. Don't forget to add a simple hashtag PS004 so that we can see that you've done it. And that's it. You did it. A special thank you this week to Carl Koiser on the audio, to our friends at Pony Creek Studios who have helped us with the theme music, to our partners at South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and to each of you. You have listened, subscribed, rated, and reviewed the Potluck Society, and it's happening because you've cared enough to make it happen. So thank you. It has been great seeing you here at the Potluck Society. We hope we'll see you soon. And as always, don't forget to bring an idea to pass.